You're listening to The Cowboy Pages. Come with me, Christy Crowley, as I travel America in search of cowboy poets and their wisdom. Today's book, South Dakota. Chapter 2. I Never Get Tired of It. A chat with rancher and poet, Bonnie Krugman. I was pretty anxious to sit down with Bonnie Krugman. In full disclosure, I wasn't familiar with her work. I think it's fair to say that she's a bit newer to the cowboy poetry scene, so I discovered pretty quickly I didn't have an access point to her work before this interview. However, she'll be performing at the 32nd Annual Elko Cowboy Poetry Festival in 2016, and I have a feeling we'll be seeing a lot more of her and her work after that introduction. What struck me about Bonnie was her calm and gentle nature. She's open and warm, but she also possesses a quiet strength that immediately put me at ease. She's graceful, plain and simple. I'd been thinking a lot about gender issues on my ride toward the Hollenbeck Ranch and this meeting with Bonnie Krugman. As luck would have it, Bonnie delivered the motherload with the first poem she shared with me, a poem she penned entitled,
"We Ain't All Been Liberated." I look at the rough hands of a ranch wife, and I note the calluses there. Then, I think of our sisters in the city who never seem to care about cattle prices, the chances of rain, or the life of a scouring calf. They're concerned with women's issues, and they usually make me laugh. Some city girls with their hair in curls tell us, oh so sweetly, how they'll change our role as women and arrange our lives so neatly. Some rant and rave and burn their bras. They seethe with acrimony, and sometimes I resent their attacks on matrimony. A woman can do a man's job, but women's livers are eager to show it. My only question for them is, why do they want men to know it? Now, these ladies have every right to believe in this agenda that they're peddling, but from where I stand, the bottom line is, I can do without their meddling. I can bake a cake, break a colt, or rope if the need arises. But if I've learned one thing, it is that life's full of compromises. I can help outside all morning. I've got a lot more time than money. We walk in the house. I bite my tongue. He says, I'll just nap till dinner's ready, honey. Now, I try to be a good wife. I pitch in and do my part. But Lordy, how I hate the days when the pickup doesn't start. Can you come give me a pull? That's the question every ranch wife dreads. It's then I envy town girls dusting knickknacks, making beds. His instructions are to just tighten the chain, then give it a little jerk. But in 40 years of marriage, I've never seen it work. I open the throttle, pop the clutch, and speed up the road with glee, while my better half, who is bumperless now, screams obscenities at me. Well, he's gone to the neighbors, and I'm going to town. I'm dressed in my better clothes. But check that one last heifer first, as every good wife knows. Her tail is kinked, and a closer look confirms my greatest fears. No shopping trip for me today, as her water bag appears. The 2 hours pass with no progress made, and she's in need of some assistance. Somehow, she seems to understand and offers no resistance. So I bring her in and snub her up, then search all through the tack room for the chain. Her gentle eyes are fearful now as she trembles with her pain. As I strip to my waist, I'm praying that no neighbor comes calling. My state of semi-nudity, some might find appalling. With my bare arm in that dark cavern, at least it's warm in there. I blindly search and find one foot, but there has to be a pair. Then my straining fingers slip the chain upon the missing half, and woman's intuition tells me that it's time to pull this calf. So I'm pulling while she's pushing as I assist with nature's way. Soon a slippery, slimy bull calf lies struggling in the hay. The wobbly heifer rises, and as I begin to feed her, I think that Gloria Steinem's never around when I really need her. So as I humbly marvel at this miracle of life, it's times like this I'm thankful that I'm just a rancher's wife.
That is such a wonderful poem.
Thank you.
It really delivers so much information. And I think as someone who's here on this awfully big adventure, learning about life in the cattle world, in the ranching world, I really know nothing at this point.
Okay.
And I really would love to know what your day-to-day is like. It's probably very silly to ask you what a typical day is like, because it probably isn't a typical day. But I wonder about the place that you live and
sure.
what happens there and what are you growing? What are you raising?
Well, we ranch. We don't farm at all. You're correct. There is no such thing as a typical day because your work changes with the seasons. Calving season, of course, is probably one of the more stressful times because you really never know what is coming with weather. We used to calve the 10th of March, start calving the 10th of March. Now we've started about the 1st of April, and 2 years ago, I believe it was, 2 or 3 years ago, we had all the blizzards in April, like 3 weeks of blizzards. We slept in the pickup for 5 nights, checked them every hour. We had them in a big enclosure. If a calf is born in the blizzard, it's dead within a few hours, you know, it's so cold, and typically you didn't get that kind of weather in April, but we did. But we saved almost everyone,
wow.
which we kept our horses saddled, and just you couldn't get around with anything but a saddle horse. And we had our pickup parked in the arena, and we would check the cows every hour with a flashlight. And if there was what a water bag is a membrane full of amniotic fluid, and that shows up first. And then it can be, you know, usually within a couple hours they calve, but you never, you know, it can be longer, or it can be sooner. And so we get them in the barn, and if the calf got up and sucked and was dried off the next morning, then we kicked them out in the snow and mm-hmm. brought more in. So that's what it's like in the spring if you're calving during a bad blizzard, and you can't predict that. The summertime we're haying. Can be hot, dirty, you know, droughts.
So tell me exactly what that means. What does haying mean?
That's when you cut the hay. We use a mower. There are a lot of different types of machinery, but we use double mowers, and then I rake, and then he bales, and you cut the hay, and you put it up for the winter. And that's, you know, you work all summer to feed them all winter, I guess. Mm-hmm. Although we don't feed a lot of hay. We really don't.
So what do you feed?
We have some big rough hills, and we feed lick tubs. That's protein. I think they're 20% protein, 10% fat. They're just like a half barrel, and they're full of this. It's like a firm molasses-based nutrition. You know, it's supposed to be very nutritious. And we don't cake anymore. We used to cake, and that's they're big pellets, and you just scatter them out, but if it's snowy, they can't get them out of the snow. So, and you know, the trouble is with caking our cows, if they all come gathered around the pickup to cake, the more aggressive cows butt the more timid ones away, so they don't all get an equal amount, and then they mob the water tank. So we went to these lick tubs and we feed them, and we scatter them out all through the pasture, and they've done very well, aren't they? All bred back when they were supposed to and did well. We're ready, you know, in good shape come spring. So.
Did you come from a ranching family?
Yes.
So you grew up in this world?
Mm-hmm. We live on the place that I grew up on.
And
my dad died in 75, mm-hmm. and we moved down there in 76. So.
And did you ever consider any other kind of life for yourself?
No.
No?
No. I went to college for several years. Just to kill time till I got married. And so that's, I never wanted to do anything else. Mm-hmm. You know, you're always capable of doing something else, but you're pretty fortunate in that if you know what you like, you can remain in that lifestyle. And I always knew I didn't want to marry anybody except a cowboy, and so that's what I did.
It must be great knowing that.
I think so. I think it's pretty liberating, actually. Yeah.
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me a little bit about your, in addition to being a poet, you're a painter.
I do. True? I haven't painted for a year or two, but yeah.
Well, that's just between you and me.
Yes, yes.
And now, when did you start painting?
Oh, probably after my kids left home, I started. And I always liked to draw. I never did do anything with poetry until just a few years ago. I shouldn't say a couple. Probably 10, 15 years ago, I started the poetry deal. And then the poetry is easier to do because the verses come into your head and you can scribble them down. And I was a home visitor for Head Start for 15 years. And a lot of miles every week, and you're driving down the road, and you write a poem. You can't paint a picture when you're driving.
So. Yeah, I think it's so interesting. We were talking before we came on air about your coming to poetry a little bit later in your life.
Because I'm 66.
Which I find absolutely fascinating. Did you have poetry around you growing up? Was that something in your family?
Oh, my dad used to recite poetry a little bit, you know, but not really. No, I just and as I told you, I walked every day, and my father-in-law was dying of cancer, and verses about him just came into my mind, and I just wrote them down, and that's the first poem I ever wrote was about Kenny's dad.
I just find that absolutely fascinating and really kind of exciting, as if maybe I could be blessed with this gift at some point in my life. Tell me a little bit about the poem that you recited for us. Do you, it's particularly of interest to me as someone coming from a very urban setting where my day-to-day stresses really revolve around getting on the BART train and making it to work on time and battling the crowds and all of that. And that poem so clearly illustrates the differences in our lifestyle.
Certainly.
And I wonder particularly how you must feel at the end of a day when you have birthed a calf.
It's wonderful. I can't tell you in just mere words that feeling that you get when, my husband and I work together. We don't have a hired man. We're not wealthy ranchers, regardless of what people in town might think, you know. But when you know, and my husband had a near fatal heart attack 11 or 12 years ago.
So
when you go to pull a calf, I mean, there's a lot of strenuous work involved. And when you get it, and I run the crank, and he usually helps him through the birth canal. And it's not real pretty, but it's the way it is. And when that calf hits the ground, and you see that it isn't breathing, and then you take a straw or anything and stick it up its nose so that it blows the mucus out. Mm. And when it starts to take that breath, it's just, you just can't describe it. It brings you to tears, it really does, because, and then they don't always make it. You know, that's a, it's a.
It's, you know, driving here today was such a really beautiful experience. And again, I think I'm at a place in particular where it's becoming more and more of a kind of emotional struggle for me to be in the city. Mm-hmm. There's so many people and there's so much poverty.
Yes.
And there's so much, kind of, I don't know, people, there's a little animosity or there's a little congestion.
Tension.
Tension. And it's, I think, just a little sort of spiritually draining.
Mm-hmm.
And I, driving here, you know, I was on my own and those beautiful rolling hills just filled with corn and beautiful rolling hills with sunflowers for as far as the eye can see. It's absolutely breathtaking.
Mm-hmm. That's East River. Wait till you get West River. And you're just tapping into West River now.
It's stunning. I mean, I was so completely overwhelmed. And I wonder a little bit, though, being in this place all the time, which I assume you are most of your days, is it still awe-inspiring?
Oh, yes, yes. I never get tired of it. Never. It's where I want to die.
Mm-hmm. It's I understand why. It's absolutely mm-hmm.
I can be in a bad mood, get on my horse, and, you know, 10 minutes later, it's so much bigger than the human spirit. Mm-hmm. That how do you not recharge spiritually when you're out in creation?
I think that must be the case. I was pretty mm-hmm. overwhelmed yeah. coming out here today. Mm-hmm. The colors are absolutely phenomenal. I can see.
And you're catching us on a good year, of course.
Yeah. I planned that very well.
About 2 years ago, it wasn't so pretty.
I'm so glad I did that strategically.
Yeah. Wait till it's 105 degrees and winds blowing 40 miles an hour. It hasn't rained for 2 months. Then, you know.
And I just to switch gears again a little bit, I'm really fortunate on this trip in particular to get to talk to a lot of women. Mm-hmm. And there's so much conversation, I think, in the kind of political arena about how women are operating in a man's world. And I feel that way in my work. I'm in a situation where I work in a kind of way that's a predominantly man-driven mm-hmm. sort of job. And I think it comes up as an issue from time to time. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that ever plays a role in your life. Did you see, and have you seen a change in your own lifetime in the way that you're perceived doing your job now versus the way that was maybe 20 years ago or 30 years ago?
I think typically now, maybe the ranching or the ranchers maybe have a little more regard for their wife's opinion, where possibly in my father's generation, the woman was expected to do her job and keep her mouth shut. And now I think women, I think there's a lot of women that are equal partners in the ranching operations. A lot of them are very good businesswomen. And I know of some that their husbands pass on and they pick up right where he left off, you know. And I always figure I can, if I'm horseback, I can do just about the same job as any man can. Of course, physically, you're limited in your strength, but for the most part, and I think men respect that, you know.
And if this is too personal question, just disregard, but,
sure.
In terms of dividing sort of the workload, mm-hmm. how does that play out, and does that just intuitively happen? I mean, how much more work are you doing inside the home versus...
Well, I do most of it in the house,
ranch.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like that's a big job.
Yeah, he does switch the remote occasionally, but beyond that, you know. We'll see. Yeah, but we're not exactly a typical couple either. So, but yeah, I do my share outside, but then we go in the house and he lets me do the housework because he just couldn't handle that. Yeah. You know, he wouldn't know what to do. Yeah. So
Bonnie, I want to ask you a little bit about your process as a poet. Okay. My first question is why poetry? And I guess more accurately, I mean, why not write an essay? Why not write a memoir piece? Why not a short story? What do you think poetry in particular is doing for you?
That's a hard question for me.
Okay.
Because I don't work at it. I'm a lazy poet. I really am. And I'm not nearly as prolific as a lot. But I just kind of wait for them to come into my head and then I scratch them down. That's how it happens.
Are they delivered sort of whole?
No. Usually the last verse comes first.
Interesting. Wow.
And then, you know, I think you have to be experiencing something. Like I wrote one about the hayfield and it was hot and I was rather unhappy on my hot old tractor. Well, he was in an air-conditioned tractor. So, you know, that poem just kind of wrote itself. And I don't... once you kind of get an idea and the verse comes into your mind, then you do kind of have to polish it up and add a syllable or take one away or change the wording. You know, I'm not going to say that I don't groom them after, but for the most part, I just kind of wait and they come into my head.
Any background about this poem is really helpful to those of us who don't know a lot about
Okay, first of all, when you put up hay, and we don't have a lot of alfalfa, but sometimes the hay gets a weevil in it, and it turns the alfalfa white, and it sucks the nutrients out of the plant. So
that's scary.
So if right, so if you don't cut it right away, you lose the nutritional value of the hay. I can't think of what else is in this poem that I rake on an old 2020 John Deere tractor. It's hot. Kenny's in an air-conditioned tractor with a baler. And so that's kind of how this poem evolved. A dump rake is a rake that's it's got all these teeth in it, and you have to pull a lever, and then it dumps the windrow. And you have to manually do this lever about every 30 or 40 feet. And so that's kind of, and I was in the hayfield one day, and it was hot, and I was getting a little crabby. And of course, when the tractors are running, you can't hear, so you had to use sign language. So The title of this poem is called Sign Language. He said, "We got weevils in the hayfield, and our alfalfa's turning white. But I've got the tractors running, dear, and we won't give up without a fight. With our mowers cutting smoothly, we're really quite a team. We're partners 50-50. It's every ranch wife's dream. The hay is lush and green, and we're happy as can be. And as we make another round, he blows a kiss to me. How I love working side by side with the man who owns my heart. But when the mowing's over, that's when our troubles start. In vain, he tries convincing me that I'm in for quite a treat. Why, I've got power steering and a brand new John Deere seat. Now, I'm no rocket scientist, but to me it is quite clear that it's nice and cool inside his cab, and it's hot as hell out here. My steering wheel is scorching, and there's a hose that's spewing oil. Then he passes with the baler. That's when my blood begins to boil. His radio is blasting, and he's rocking to the beat, and I glare at him in envy as I swelter in this heat. You stop. Come here, emotions, in a manner I find rude. I'll bet we're going to have a talk about my attitude." And that's when I get that lecture, the one I've grown to hate, about how if this marriage is going to work, I must cooperate. Then he's back inside his tractor. He smiles and gestures with his thumb. But he's not fooling this old girl. I know he thinks I'm dumb. He signals, "Keep those windrows even. I know it's part of hayfield law, but I find it hard to concentrate with a sweat bee in my bra. My sunburned ears are ringing. I see white spots before my eyes. But in his air-conditioned comfort, he just ignores my cries. Well, I've had all the fun that I can stand. I think I've made my contribution. And so I pull out all the stops without fear of retribution. The veins in his temples are bulging. I've never seen him quite this tense. Who'd think a 36-foot dump rake could take out a half a mile of fence? Then he's a knight in shining armor as he stops to help me in my plight. But it's way too late for sweet talk, and I'm spoiling for a fight. Well, I think I've gotten through to him, for he's quiet as a mouse, as I give him one last gesture and turn my tractor toward the house."
Wow, that's fantastic. That's great.
He didn't think so.
Yeah, he probably didn't. And so much sensory language and feeling. You're right in the tractor with you. Suffering. Yeah. Right there with you. It's really, really, really delicious.
There it is. Graceful, even in the face of frustration. It seems to me, as I reflect back on my conversation with Bonnie, she's in the right place, at the right time, doing exactly the right thing. I find myself now struggling to uncover what my next chapter might be. And I have this almost constant nagging feeling that I'm not good enough, that I'm not doing enough, that I'm not successful enough. Bonnie and I seem to have very different inner lives. She's in no way painting the picture of a perfect life, but when she describes birthing a calf as an act that brings you to tears, a little part of me longs to feel what she must feel in that moment. Perhaps this grace lies in the simple act of caring for something outside yourself. Is that what I need more of? Is it time to consider a mama cow for a pet? Is my landlord ready for that? My trip through the Dakotas would continue, and my drive that night would take place as the sunset. That evening, the clouds dancing their graceful ballet would be my companions. I thanked them for it. And I thank you, too, for listening. You can learn more about our show, Cowboy Poets, and see pictures of my travels at thecowboypages.com.